It's Financial Freedom Friday, and on this episode of the Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks podcast, we are going to unpack the 5 financial indicators every investor should track.
Hey Mavericks, this is Ava Baukamp, and this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks is brought to you by Legacy Impact Investors. We are an industrial investment firm located in cash flow country, the Midwest. We strive to shield off risk and beat inflation, all while producing predictable cash flow. We curate real estate investment opportunities for busy professionals and other real estate investors seeking passive income. To learn more about what we do and connect with me, go to www.legacyimpactinvestors.com.
Maverick, noun, unusual person, a visionary, leader, go-getter, an independent thinker. They see the vision for their life and pull that future towards them with an unyielding belief that things can and must be better. They achieve what most won't. Innovative, influential, daring, and direct, with a remarkably high tolerance for taking calculated risk. A foe to the status quo. This is Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks. Your host, Neil Timmons, has been involved with over $300 million in real estate transactions. He's a published author, commercial property investor, and real estate syndicator. This show is for those who want to learn how to earn passive income through real estate investing. Now, here's your host, Neil Timmons.
Welcome to the Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks podcast, where we provide you with actionable steps to grow your passive income and become job optional. It's Financial Freedom Friday, and I'm here with Neil Timmons. During this episode, you are going to unpack the 5 financial indicators you should be tracking. For those of you who are new, I'm your host, Ava Baukamp, and I love to educate investors about passive income from real estate. Before we open up today's episode, I want to ask you for a small favor. If you like what you're hearing, please give us a thumbs up and subscribe to the show so that you never miss a valuable episode. And if you love what you're hearing, please give us a written review. Also, be sure to take a look at the description of this episode as we have it packed with thousands of dollars in valuable content. All right, it's another Financial Freedom Friday. Neil, how are you doing?
I'm terrific. These are some of my favorite conversations that we get to have, and the feedback for Financial Freedom Friday has been just terrific. So I'm excited to be here and chat.
Awesome. Yeah, we've got great content lined up today. And I want to open it up with another piece of data from CNBC. So they reported just a couple of weeks ago that 61% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. That's a huge number of people. 78% of those who earn less than $50,000 a year report living paycheck to paycheck. Then it drops down to 65% of people who earn between 50 and 100. But for those earning $100,000 or more, still over 40% report living paycheck to paycheck. That's kind of a scary thing to think about.
It is significant. And for a lot of those in the upper echelon, it's not a function of earnings, it's a function of spending. How does one live?
Yep. Yeah. And I wanted to draw that out in connection with our episode today, because we're going to be talking about some financial indicators that as an investor, just as a general consumer, it's good to keep an eye on so that as much as you can reduce that lifestyle inflation and make sure you're not in a position where you're having to scramble and live paycheck to paycheck. And some of that just starts with some simple financial literacy. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. Financial indicators that you can keep an eye on, you can monitor so that you really start to get more comfortable. You can start to educate yourself more and just be more aware about what's going on from a financial standpoint. And that can help really guide you as an investor. And so my number one resource recommendation is Statista. It is an online resource. They have a free version and a paid version that gives you lots of great stats and data that you can track. They've got a really nice user interface. And so my recommendation is to create an account there and just poke around. There's lots of good data in there. And pretty much all of the indicators that we're talking about today are available through Statista. So check it out.
Top 5 right here. And it's Statista. It's not Statista, as I like to call it. internal here, just because it's easiest for me to remember. Top one in this list of five, Ava, is inflation.
Yep. Inflation, it's pretty much in most headlines that you're going to see. So we wanted to break it down for you. What is inflation? It's a term that gets misused, in my opinion. Inflation refers to the general increase of prices of goods and services over time, leading to a decrease in your purchasing power. Essentially, the $5 bought you a lot more 20 years ago than it does today. And inflation is commonly measured using CPI, Consumer Price Index, or the PPI, Producer Price Index. And these two metrics track the average price changes of a wide basket of goods and services over a specific period. And inflation is important for real estate investors for a number of reasons. Inflation, as we all know, impacts our cost of living, cost of goods, but inflation also has an influence on interest rate. And so as an investor, you need to understand and just have a general pulse on inflation because it tends to affect property values, rental income, and even financing costs.
You know, there's a couple of great places to track inflation, Y charts and Statista, to be able to get the data there. And you're right, Ava, it has a dramatic impact on lending. And inflation, a lot of us talk about inflation, I think it's largely misunderstood. Some level of inflation is historically good. And if you are in real estate and you borrow money at an appropriate level, inflation is absolutely our friend. We have a fixed rate interest, and inflation allows us to charge more in rent over a period of time while paying back our fixed rate of interest. We know, think about your house, for example, if you get a 30-year mortgage, you know exactly 22 years from now, exactly what your payment, principal and interest, that section of it, is going to be. Well, you get to pay it back with dollars that are 22 years from now, and those dollars are certainly worth very different than what a dollar's worth today.
Yeah, that's a great note to end on for inflation. Up next, treasury rates. So we've got three of them, the 2-year, 5-year, and 10-year treasury rates. The treasury rate just represents the yield on government bonds with specific maturity. So that's the 2, 5, and 10 mark there, indicating the return an investor can expect from lending money to the government. These are usually viewed as extremely stable, very secure, risk-averse type of investment. And these rates are determined by the market and just generally reflect a relationship between the bond's price and its fixed interest payments. Neil, can you talk about why treasury rates are important for investors to be aware of?
It's the floor. It's considered the risk-free rate, and specifically the United States treasury rates, considered the risk-free rate, so that everything else has a risk premium associated with it. If you're buying a stock, you're buying a bond, you're buying a piece of real estate, everything trades above that. The idea being that a stock, a bond, a piece of real estate is riskier than the debt of the United States government. So therefore, there is a premium, a risk premium priced on top of that. It gives us a really good idea. And oftentimes when one is borrowing, oftentimes commonly used is the 5-year treasury to peg an interest rate. And that starts with the base, and then you get a risk premium on top of that when borrowing from a lender. And so it's really good. Plus, on top of that, one of the things in addition to understand is what's the yield curve, meaning the difference between a 2-year, a 5-year, and a 10-year. In a normal situation, you'd get paid more, meaning that the interest rate would be higher for a 10-year versus the 2-year. You're going out further, you're taking a little on more risk, and therefore you should be paid more. And when that changes, like it has several months ago, and we're still in a position today as we record this, where it's inverted, meaning the 2-year, you get paid more from the United States government to put your money into a 2-year bond versus a 10-year bond. And when that's inverted, it's typically indicative that we are headed or we are in a recession.
Yeah, I think last I looked up the last, I think it was 5 or 6 times that we were in an inverted yield curve environment, a recession followed. So it'll be very interesting to see how that all shakes out because we are in an inverted yield curve environment.
I just read a piece on that, Ava. 12 out of the last 13 times, when it has inverted, a recession has followed. It's only missed once. And so we're in an inverted yield curve today, but we're not in a recession. So it's going to be interesting to see how this materializes.
Yep. So that's number 2, treasury rates 2, 5, and 10 year. And like Neil mentioned, just pay attention. Is that 2 year, are you getting a higher premium than you are for the 10 year? And that'll tell you that you're in an environment like we are today. Up next, number 3 is employment. And this has been at the top of a lot of conversations now as people are monitoring the Fed to see if they're going to hold rates stable, if they're going to raise, if they're going to lower. Employment is a big factor in that conversation. So employment indicators measure the health of the job market, and it includes metrics like the unemployment rate, job growth, labor force participation. And the unemployment rate is the ratio of unemployed individuals to the labor force. And job growth is measured by non-farm payroll. So if you're not in the Midwest like us, you might not think about that, but non-farm payrolls. And employment is important for real estate investors for a number of reasons. One of the most basic being that strong employment indicates good demand, strong demand for housing, property values, rental rates, and the ability for people and businesses to pay back consistently rents, mortgages, those kinds of things. So, Neil, can you give any comments on employment and why it's important to investors?
The biggest thing from an employment standpoint is it relates to investors. It's the backbone, right? If you got strong employment, you're going to have people, if you have net positive employment, you have people moving to an area. And that means an impact in housing, rentals, all sorts of housing, and then everything else, right? Everything else follows. Retail follows people. Your industrial follows people. Everything follows employment. So it is the backbone of our whole economy, of the industry. And then also a comment about the Fed. The Fed has a dual mandate when it comes to ultimately interest rates. Their mandate is 2% inflation and full employment. So they've got a unique job, unique task at hand when they have to balance both those things, because oftentimes you could raise interest rates and it's going to challenge employment, or you could reduce interest rates and it could send employment the other way to make it equally as a challenge to hire folks. And so those are their dual mandates, and it's a balancing act for them when they set their interest rate targets. Are you a passive real estate investor seeking financial freedom? Well, today's market's unique and it's ever changing. Now is the time to get educated on how to strategically invest in commercial real estate for long-term financial freedom. Grab your copy of How to Passively Invest in a Changing Economic Environment. Go to www.mavericksinvest.com.
Yeah, those two levers are blunt force instruments. They're not fine-tuned surgical instruments. They're pretty blunt force instruments. We forgot to mention for the last number 2, the treasury rates. Where can you track that? You can just Google it. CNBC, Macro Trends, Market Watch, Wall Street Journal. Wall Street is usually the widely accepted version to track, so you can just Google it. That's pretty easy. Unemployment, employment, where can you track that? You can go to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and they'll have all kinds of numbers for you to track there as well. Or just a simple Google search will give you a pretty good indicator of what's going on there. Up next, GDP, which stands for Gross Domestic Product. And GDP is the total value of goods and services produced within a country's borders in a specific period of time. And this is simply an indicator of overall economic health. And the calculation for GDP is fairly complex. There's a lot of things that go into it. But remember, it's the count of total goods and services within a country over a certain period of time. And there's a variety of things that go into this. So total consumer spending, government spending, investments, exports, and then deducting all of the country's imports. And you can have GDP measured in real terms and in nominal terms. And real terms, real GDP just adjusts for inflation so that we can actually monitor, is there a growth in production or are we just in an inflationary environment? And so GDP is important for real estate investors to track because it can signify economic expansion, retraction, and this can just have a factor and an impact on real estate demand, future growth for rental income. And real estate tends to perform well historically during periods of GDP growth. And this is simply a result of GDP indicates a healthy economic environment. Neil, what are your thoughts?
In a business environment, things are going up. We're producing more, consuming more, GDP is increasing. There's additional demand for commercial real estate space. And when there's additional demand for that, it's generally a sign, as you said, of a healthy economy. people, as individuals, are spending more, upgrading housing, there's typically a stronger demand as well.
Yeah, I think this actually makes me think of a current trend, reshoring and onshoring. And this specifically relates to industrial real estate, warehouse, last mile delivery locations. You saw during COVID that a lot of supply chains just fell apart. We realized we can't always import everything from China. Right. And so Mexico now is one of the US's largest import-export countries. And that's because a lot of manufacturers are looking at relocating their facilities. So moving facilities that have previously operated in China to countries that are closer to the US. And Mexico is a very popular destination, and that for someone who's looking at imports and exports of different goods provides them a lot more security because they don't have to worry about shipping things halfway around the world and another global pandemic that they can't control and ships and boats being stuck in port for months and months on end. And so as we're talking about GDP, it just made me think of that topic as well.
It's going to, Mexico is set to overtake China, I believe, based on what I just read, in the next year as the largest import partner of ours, which has been tremendous. It's not shocking given that they are down the road, if you will.
Yep, definitely. All right. For that little rabbit trail, we're going to take it back. So number five, price indices that you should be tracking as an investor, CPI and PPI. We mentioned these at the top of this episode, and I got another email from Statista this morning that inflation ticked up in August, 3.7% compared to August of 2022, and consumer prices are up 0.6% from July of 2023, so just last month, which is largely due to an increase in gas prices. Mm-hmm. So just wanted to give that little note as we talk about CPI and PPI. CPI measures the change in average prices paid by consumers for goods and services, and PPI, that producer price index, measures the average changes in selling prices received by domestic producers. CPI is made up of a wide range, I'll call it a basket again, of food and beverage, housing, apparel, transportation, medical care, recreation, education, communication, all kinds of goods and services. And I'll just quickly add here, real estate is more of a lagging indicator within that basket. It can take some time for real estate values to catch up within that number. PPI, producer price index, measures the average change over time in the selling prices received by domestic producers for their products. This can include the first commercial transaction for many products and some services. It's a family of three different indices: commodities, stage of processing, so basically in the middle, and then industry goods on the wholesale. So basically production in the middle, and then once they actually go to be wholesale. And prices, CPI and PPI, can reflect the total cost of living and production costs. And real estate investors need to be aware of this because of general consumer confidence. What kind of factors might come into play for renters, buyers, and sellers? So Neil, can you talk a little bit about CPI and PPI?
Yeah, and I think you open it up nicely at the top of the show here relative to inflation. These pieces roll up and then ultimately become the measure for inflation. And that's where when I focus on these numbers, it's directly as it relates to inflation. What does this look like over a period of time? How do we measure it? And ultimately, what's the sentiment? Where does one think we're headed? Because the largest reason that inflation increases is that people believe inflation is going to increase. They believe it's going to go higher. They proved this in the 80s, and Volcker came out and put a hammer down with how quickly he raised interest rates and ultimately tamed inflation during the Reagan era there. So it's understanding where it is and then the general belief of where it's going.
Yeah. And so I think that's a great note for us to wrap up the episode on, is that a lot of consumers, they're not aware of what's going on in the economy. They are driven largely by sentiment and feelings. And most of us are, if we're completely honest, we're driven by feelings and emotions. And so we want to give you these five different indicators: price index at the bottom, GDP, employment, treasury rates and inflation so that when we're in an environment where everyone's feeling like something's going to happen or they think something's going to happen, you can at least have your head square. You can have historical data guiding you so that you're not caught up or swept up in giant waves of consumer emotion. You can have your eye on what's going on. And as you continue to make this a habit of monitoring these financial indicators, you'll get a better sense and get better over time of having an understanding. Well, I remember 2 years ago, this was happening. Or I remember just 6 months ago, we were in an entirely different type of environment. And so that can be a great practice for you as an investor to become aware, educated, and make sure that you're taking charge and you're in control of the data and the news that you're consuming so you don't get caught up in crazy headlines.
To our listeners, pat yourself on the back. You guys have made it to the end of the show, and most people never finish what they start. If you receive value from today's show, be sure to share it on LinkedIn, your Facebook page, or your social media platform of choice. Subscribe to never miss a valuable episode in the future. And if you found value in today's episode, give us a thumbs up with a positive review. If there's a particular topic you'd like to hear about, well, I want to hear from you. Shoot me a message on LinkedIn. The link to my profile is below in the show notes. You can connect with me there for more valuable content.